Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The Academy Awards are a big night of television, looking at a whole year of movies. Sunday night will be the 83rd Academy Awards. We're getting into big numbers of films, too. For the second year now, 10 up for Best Picture. We'll see British royalty in The King's Speech, the music behind us there, go up against Harvard elite and Silicon Valley in The Social Network. We've got a working-class fighter, old-fashioned cowboys, and a girl in True Grit, and a black swan ballerina. This hour on Point, we're looking at the films of 2010 and the Oscars. You can join the conversation. What do you think of the year's nominees? Where's your vote? Best actor, best actress, best picture? What's your favorite movie moment from the year's Oscar-nominated crop? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Very regal and refined sounding there with soundtrack from The King's Speech. That may not be what we get from the co-hosts of this year's Oscars, Anne Hathaway and James Franco. Their stuff is coming out already, prepared for Oscar night. Here's a promo where Hathaway shows off her playful side, switching from a spoof of Evita to a rendition of the 1992 hip-hop song Rump Shaker.
Don't cry for me, you Kodak Theater.
All I want to do is zoom, a zoom, a zoom, zoom, and a boom, boom. Just shake your rump. All I want to do is zoom, a zoom, a zoom, zoom, and a boom, boom. Just shake your
Okay, so it's going to be a different deal. Joining us now from Chicago is Michael Phillips, film critic for the Chicago Tribune. Michael, thank you very much for being here.
Tom, thanks for having me on.
Also with us from Los Angeles is Kim Morgan. Her movie and culture blog is Sunset Gun. She will be live blogging the Oscars for MSN's movie blog, The Hit List. Kim, welcome back to On Point.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you both. Let's just get it out of the way right off the bat. I don't think that the Oscar nominees make even half of the top 10 list that each of you put out for last year. Kim, I think I only see a couple on your list. We're going to talk about Oscar nominees, but that doesn't mean that critics necessarily think they're the best films. You've only got a couple on yours.
Well, two of them I hadn't seen yet. I hadn't seen True Grit, that screen, too late for me, and that would have been on my list. So, and The Fighter would have been on my list as well. So two of them. My list is very strange.
You got Jackass 3D and Mother and Carlos and Enter the Void. Well, that's fine. Everybody's entitled.
Yeah, I don't think Enter the Void's going to get nominated. It should be, but no. Best title sequence. I don't think that exists. It should. I like a lot of the films nominated, however. This has been, I think, a really interesting year. I think some people thought this year was a poor year for films. I think it's been really eclectic and interesting. I'm not sure how Michael feels about that, but...
Michael, I see about, 4 out of 10 on your best of 2010 that are on the Oscar list. Does that mean you think it's not a great year or something else?
It's an odd year, I think, because up until November, I really did think it wasn't nearly what the previous 2 or 3 years was offering, even when you factored in the international and specialty / art house films that typically do kind of cheer a critic up, even when they're dealing with movies like Just Go With It or The Backup Plan. But then the old cliche kind of became true. You got by November, mid-December, you started seeing movies like Black Swan and The Fighter, and that's the one, I think, at least one there, Kim, where we agree. That's a picture that, you know, for my money, it makes up for the egregious win of Million Dollar Baby a few years ago. It completely revived the boxing genre, where I thought Million Dollar Baby kind of embalmed it. But, when you look at the final 10 they actually came up with, there's only one or two I wouldn't on some level recommend to folks. I don't think 127 Hours really belongs there, but
we'll dive in, or
Toy Story 3 for that matter.
Well, we may have some debate there. We'll dive in and look at that list. Let's just take one second, if we can, to to look at the Hoopla coming on Sunday night. You've got Hathaway and Franco at 28 and 32 years old. Franco in 127 hours. First time there's been a male-female duo hosting physically on the same stage for the Oscars. And they've got moms and even a grandma of Oscar nominees enlisted to tweet during the course of the hour. What about the show on the shows, Kim? It's a big deal for television. Is it got the same grip it's always had for the movie industry?
The mominees.
The mominees.
Yeah. Mominees. Yeah. Well, this is going to be an interesting year. I mean, I don't know how I really do not know how well they're going to do. It seems that James Franco, given the output of what he does, and mm-hmm. apparently the actor does not sleep, given all of his different installations. Very talented actor, too. And I love that he decided to do this against all of the advice of his management and just said, I'm not going to win. Colin Firth is going to win. Who cares? I'll host the Oscars. I do not know what to expect from them. I hope they do a great job. I think they are incorporating social media into it, like Facebook and Twitter and all that.
Of course,
for the first time. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be different. It's going to be different, and it's going to be nicer, as they say, not because of the Ricky Gervais thing of the Golden Globes.
Nicer as in not foul-mouthed or mean. Are you sure? Yeah. We'll see.
I mean, it's Franco. Yeah, who knows?
It's Franco. I want to get to these films if we can. Let's just get started. The King's Speech is getting so much attention. Here's a little clip from it. 12 nominations, the most of any film this year. Here's Colin Firth. He plays King George VI. He seeks the help of Lionel Logue, Jeffrey Rush, to overcome his stuttering problem. And here, Logue takes a seat in a royal chair.
What are you doing?
Get up. You can't sit there. Get up.
Why not?
It's a chair.
No, that is not a chair. That is St. Edward's chair.
People have carved their names on it.
Listen to me.
Listen to you? By what right?
Because I have a right to be. And I have a voice.
Yes, you do.
And lo and behold, in his rage, he's not stuttering. Michael Phillips, what puts this plummy British movie up at the top of the list with so many nominations? Sort of came out late in the year and boom, straight to the top. Why?
Okay, here's the movie it reminds me the most of is Educating Rita. Do you remember Educating Rita with Michael Caine?
Yeah, sure.
And my God, Kim, I'm blanking on the actress. Is it Julie Walters? Was that?
I think it's Julie Walters. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. This tidy
kind of
old fashioned.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. It was a very tidy old fashioned stage play, then transferred to the screen. A modest hit, not a big Oscar bait year, but it got some nominations. Anyway, The King's Speech is based on an unproduced play, and I think it has a lot of the same appeal, the sort of somewhat creaky, old-fashioned construction, and it's basically just a showcase for two wonderful performers with a lot of good people in support, but that's what it comes down to. It comes down to the pleasure of watching Colin Firth and Jeffrey Rush just bat it around. It's like the world's greatest badminton game. And is it great historical drama? No. Is it facile? Yes. Does it simplify? Does it shave the edges? does it present the completely factual version of it? No. None of that. I happen to think factual accuracy is overrated in the biopic genre, and it's the one thing that The King's Speech has in common with The Social Network is that it's kicked up all this interesting discussion about how true is it and how much does the truth matter.
Of course, you've got this, as you call it, creaky sort of period drama up against, this Facebook, Digerati film. Let's hear just a little bit from that, and I'll come to you, Kim. Social Network nominated for 8 Academy Awards, including Best Picture. Jesse Eisenberg plays Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg. His partner and friend is Eduardo Saverin, Andrew Garfield. Things move fast.
It's moving faster than any of us ever imagined it would. It's moving fast. It's moving fast, and Sean thinks that we...
Sean is not part of this company.
We have over 300,000 members, Eduardo. We're in 160 schools, including 5 in Europe.
I'm aware of that, Mark. I am the CFO.
We need more programmers, and we need more money, and he set up the Teal meeting. He set up meetings all over town.
Okay, it's moving fast. Kim, I mean, what a funny duo to be battling for the top here. An old period drama, great acting, and Social Network, big story.
Right, and I think it should win. I don't think it's going to. I think The King's Speech is going to sweep in and win, but The Social Network, I mean, with the performances, the kind of performances that go underrated because they're such inward performances that look easy, but they're not. Mm-hmm. I mean, just to spout all that snappy dialogue, that Aaron Sorkin dialogue that could teeter on the edge of being too precious, and it's not. It works. Mm-hmm. And the way that it just seamlessly intertwines with the story and the and David Fincher's direction, and it should win. I mean, and it's also a film that's relevant in our time. So sure. When you watch it, you know, it's a bit disturbing to us because a lot of us are on Facebook, and to see that this kid is the person that is responsible for all of these things and all of these dramas, and if you think about it, I mean, if it doesn't win, think about all of the status updates that are going to be on Facebook and how weird it's going to be for Mark Zuckerberg to see a meta moment for him to see, you know, how many disappointed people there are that the film won't win, the film that he probably, or well, he doesn't really like about himself. But it's a wonderfully made movie. It's wonderfully written. I just think, and it's something of our time, the way a film in the 70s, like The Parallax View or something, that you really feel it within our time and it's relevant. Mm. I think it's a more interesting, more important film, and I think it should win.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about Oscar picks on the home stretch to the red carpet at the Academy Awards coming up Sunday night with Kim Morgan. Her blog is Sunset Gun. She'll be live blogging on Sunday night for MSN's Hit List blog. Michael Phillips is with us, film critic for the Chicago Tribune. You may have seen him on At the Movies, filling in there in the final season for Roger Ebert. We heard a little bit of the Social Network score going out there. Brooke writes in on Facebook, of course, "I care mostly, and I know you didn't ask, that Trent Reznor wins for best score," she says. "Fantastic and so crucial to the Social Network." Lots of comments come in here. Christine says, "Hated Winter's Bone. Walked out when the chick spit out her teeth from her brutalized, beaten-up body. Yeah, that was a rough moment. But I've got to say, I loved it." And we'll talk about that. The Fighter, up for 7 awards, for including Best Picture. Mark Wahlberg plays Irish Mickey Ward, a boxer from Lowell, Massachusetts. His girlfriend, Charlene, Amy Adams, clashes with him about his family's involvement with his boxing, especially his crack-addicted half-brother, Dickie, played by, wonderfully, by Christian Bale.
Dickie's a junk bag.
Hey.
He's a junk bag.
Why am I the problem? I'm his blood. I'm his family.
I'm
the one fighting, okay? Not you, not you, and not you. I know what I need.
And you need Dickie?
I want Dickie back. And I want you, Charlene. And I want O'Keefe. I want my family. What's wrong with that?
What's wrong with that? I find myself really rooting for this one, Kim, Michael. I mean, we've got these kind of hoity-toity King's Speech and Harvard, you know, folks starting their billion-dollar fortunes, which is great. But here it is, down and dirty, and some really great performances in The Fighter. Does it have a chance at top accolades?
What do you think? Christian Bale's going to win. I'm sure.
Best supporting actor.
For best supporting actor. I'm so glad, Michael, that you agree with me on this one, because I feel the minority on Christian Bale, because there's so much backlash against his performance, that he's overacting, that he's just hamming in all of the Lowell scenery, and it's just taking all the attention away from all the other actors, which I think misses the point of the picture, which is this character is taking the attention away from everyone. He is the focal point and centerpiece of the family. He is overacting. He's got a camera crew following around, in fact, in the movie that he's overacting to, and he's a crack addict. And if anyone has seen the real Dickie, he acts like that. And that scene that you played, that not you meltdown, is kind of a culmination of Mark Wahlberg's character breaking down and finally going, you know, come on, everyone. You know, everyone is just so it's the breaking point of the family. Let's all settle down and focus on me, you know. It's a great scene.
I have yet to meet a low-key crack addict, so
yes.
I don't have any, you know, it, I think the fascinating thing about the picture is that the actors are all working in different keys, and yet it doesn't sink the picture. It actually helps it. It's got a very interesting clash of tensions in the acting styles. You have Melissa Leo, who I think is also a pretty likely winner for Best Supporting Actress. Melissa Leo is the mother.
Yeah.
Right on the edge of caricature, right along with Christian Bale as the half-brother, working against a very, very kind of deadpan, naturalistic Mark Wahlberg in the kind of role and giving the kind of performance that is never rewarded come Oscar time because it's simply too, what, not flashy enough?
Straight, I don't know.
Right.
Yeah, and Wahlberg, I think, Wahlberg has just simply become one of the most solid, reliable, honest screen presences we have.
Melissa Leo, controversial this year because she's been, you know, pumping for herself here in some interesting ways. Is that going to hurt her, Kim, and remind us what's happened there?
Well, she did do her own campaign for your consideration where she dressed glamorously and she's been kind of vocal about how she hasn't been getting enough press and that it goes
about
to the
ageism.
Younger actresses.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And she wanted to show her glamorous side. And I mean, I think she's being pretty honest and just showing, you know, she wants the award. Some people think it's tacky and in bad taste. And I think that'd be really unfair if she wasn't awarded for something like that, but it might happen. Academy.
When did tacky bad taste get in the way of Oscars? I don't know.
Let's talk to Cher. I know.
Everybody promotes, right? Everybody's promoting studios anyway. I want to get our listeners in here, if I may. Bonnie in Centerville, Massachusetts. Bonnie, thanks for calling. You're on the air. What do you think?
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Well, I saw The Social Network first last fall. Loved it. Every minute of it.
Yeah.
And I think it is in contention with The King's Speech because I saw that recently. They're both terrific. But the movie that blew me away was The Fighter. And I thought Christian Bale and Melissa Leo were some of the best acting performances I have ever seen.
Not overacting for you, Bonnie? Not overacting?
Not at all. I'm a nurse, and I've actually taken care of families.
You've seen that.
And no, not overacting.
Bonnie, as a nurse, are you frightened at all by the hair in that film?
Are you medically afraid
of the hair?
Hey, I felt like I was in Dorchester, you know, or Longmore.
Okay, so if you were Queen, Bonnie, which one do you give the award? Social Network, King's Speech, The Fighter? Which one for Best Picture?
Well, I think King's Speech will walk away with it.
Would you put it there?
I loved it. Yes, I would.
Why? What about it? I haven't seen that one. I'm sorry, but it takes
you by surprise. Gee, I didn't know he stuttered. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it has historical significance, and I think it was a story that wasn't told until the Queen Mother died. He wasn't able to write the story until she died.
There's got
to
be something I'm missing here. Who cares if some old king was stuttering?
Oh, I think it was wonderful. I think because it affected England at a time when they needed someone to be able to speak to them. And I think it was wonderful.
Kim, is it about the overcoming, the surmounting, the human spirit? Is that it in the end?
Absolutely. Yeah, thanks for the leading question.
you'll go with it. Good.
No, she's answering it better than I can.
Yeah.
I mean, and the Academy loves that. They love good period pieces about royalty. They mm-hmm. love people overcoming the odds, you know. They love people that suffer from some sort of affliction. Yes, and I don't mean that in a sarcastic way. Well, a little bit, but because it's a perfectly nice film, but it's not. I agree with Michael. It's not. You know, maybe I'm wrong, Michael, but it didn't blow your mind, right? You weren't.
And yet, lined up with a dozen nominations. That's a big number.
Well, it is a big number, and I do. I ended up liking The King's Speech about as much as I liked The Social Network. There's no question The Social Network's a more ambitious and more interesting picture, and I'm still mm-hmm. kind of hoping it wins Best Picture. I do think, though, there are some weird commonalities, though. You both have these recent slices of history set among the privileged classes.
Mm-hmm.
So you're dealing with
whether Harvard or the Court of St. James.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But as Kim points out, you have one of the most radical temperature differences of any two nominees you can name. You have a very warm, cozy picture in The King's Speech, and you have a very interestingly cool and unsentimental tone in The Social Network, and the atmosphere of that picture, no little thanks to that fantastic score, very sparingly deployed, is no less sinister than anything in Seven or Zodiac. That's the peculiar thing about The Social Network. It's got that atmosphere of like something vaguely sinister happening.
Pay attention. Christine in Cookeville, Tennessee. Christine, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you all?
Pretty well. What did you like, Christine?
Well, even though I had probably the most affection for The Fighter, I did want to lift up Natalie Portman's acting in The Black Swan. I thought that the scene in the women's bathroom after she found out she had gotten the part of a swan queen was one of the best acting I've ever seen in my life.
Natalie Portman taking it on board in the bathroom after she gets the news. Let us listen to a little bit of that, Christine. Stick with us. Here she is, up for Best Actress, plays the prim dancer Nina, lands the lead role in a production of Swan Lake, and then has to find her dark side.
I had the craziest dream last night about a girl who was turned into a swan, but her prince falls for the wrong girl, and she kills herself.
And we're off in Twilight Zone again. Christine, what was it about that moment when she gets the news? The tight shot of her face, very taut. She looked like she weighed about 100 pounds. Maybe.
Well, I think the exquisite pleasure and pain on her face in that scene, it was beyond anything I've ever seen on film, really.
Kim, how about it? Pleasure and pain or S&M? What did you think of Black Swan and Natalie Portman?
Oh, I love Black Swan. I love Natalie Portman, and I want her to win. I think she will win, and I agree. There's so much pleasure and pain in this movie, and I love the tone of this movie, too. I think some people, I know a lot of people don't like this film as well. They think it's really ridiculous and over the top again. I think that he actually does a really wonderful job of balancing something that's incredibly sympathetic, this character that you really, really do grow to care about, Natalie Portman, and yet it's... Like a William Castle film at times, you know, or a Jacqueline Suzanne novel, you know. So it's and yet it's got these Polanski touches, and it's all Darren Aronofsky, too. But her performance centers it and keeps it to this human level. Where I mean, one of my favorite scenes is when she is so sympathetic towards Winona Ryder. And Winona Ryder, you know, she's washed up and old at 39 or whatever her age is there to get kicked out of the ballet. And just her reactions of sympathy and how there are so many great shots, not just the shots of her looking at her face with her eyeballs bleeding, but of joy for herself or sadness or sympathy. And it's a very soulful, beautiful performance. And the best that Natalie Portman has done, and I hope she wins.
Michael, what do you think? Natalie Portman for Best Actress, maybe? What about Best Picture? It's on the list for Best Picture, though nobody talks about it.
I think it's likely to go Portman's way for Best Actress. I think there's a chance that Annette Bening will win because she's won a couple of the Critics' Prizes along the way for her work in The Kids Are All Right. That's not a dominant performance like the King's, Portman in Black Swan, but what I really like about that work, and I like that film a great deal, is that that performance has to be a certain size just to compete with the bravura technique going on. I mean, the film is berserk. There's no question.
Yes.
And I find the big success of Black Swan to be one of the most interesting stories of the year, really, just in terms of a film I never would have predicted.
What do you think that's about? People going with that very high kind of arch emotion and over the top.
Kim already said it. It's the kind of melodrama we do not see. We don't see stylistically aggressive melodrama very often in American film, and I think that film plays a guessing game that seemed to be played by a lot of pictures, documentary as well as narrative feature, in 2010. Am I to believe my eyes?
Yeah.
You know, that's the game played by Inception, Shutter Island, Exit Through the Gift Shop, documentaries like Exit Through the Gift Shop.
Is that really up there on the screen?
Yeah, is it? Can I believe what I'm seeing? And when a film plays that guessing game tantalizingly, it seems to catch an audience, a wider audience than you'd ever predict. I mean, I never would have predicted. Would you have predicted, Kim, that Black Swan would make more money than The Social Network, for example?
No, I would never have predicted that. And yeah, repeat viewings and
yeah. Ready for high passion here.
Yeah. Well, I didn't predict that The King's Speech would be so high up.
Who'd have thought? Ballet and Old Royals in 2011. We've got so many callers. Forgive me. Christine, thank you for your call. Neil in St. Albans, Vermont. Neil, you're on the air.
How are you doing, Tom?
Pretty well. What do you see?
Well, I'll tell you the truth. You know, Ralph Toporov, a director I worked with in New York, he's at the School of Visual Arts, a wonderful man. And he had said years ago that the Academy Awards is, of course, the industry bringing attention to itself, which is a wonderful thing. Who else will? But as far as what I've seen this year, True Grit, that young actress, Hailee Steinfeld, I felt that she should win. She was absolutely stunning, the young lady.
Oh, yeah, it was quite a performance. I'm glad you raised it, Neil. Let's listen to just a little bit of that. The Coen brothers bringing back True Grit from the novel by Charles Portis. John Wayne did the film in 1969. This time it's Jeff Bridges as Rooster Cogburn, a 14-year-old Mattie Ross, played by Hailee Steinfeld, as she hires Rooster to go after her father's murderer. It's not easy for Mattie to convince Rooster to let her go with him.
Can't go after Ned Pepper, band of hard men, look after a baby at the same time.
I'm not a baby.
Won't be stopping at boarding houses where there's warm beds and hot grub on the table. I'll be traveling fast, eating light. But the sleeping is done to take place on the ground.
Well, I have slept out at night before. Papa took me a little Frank Coon hunting last summer on the Petit Jean. We were in the woods all night. We sat around a big fire and yarned and all told ghost stories. We had a good time.
Coon hunting? This ain't no coon hunt.
This ain't no coon hunt. Hailee Steinfeld and Jeff Bridges in True Grit. Now, a lot of people have seen that one. Goes way back to 1969. There's been some talk that Hailee Steinfeld should be up on the leading role, best actress in a leading role list. What did you think of her performance, Kim?
I loved her performance. And again, it's another very hard performance because the dialogue is so stylistic and it's mm-hmm. directly from the Charles Portis novel. And it's so rich and beautiful. And it's hard to do that. And you have to sort of accept it. It takes about a half an hour to sort of accept that world.
Maybe longer to figure out Jeff Bridges' marbles in the mouth. That was pretty great, though.
But it all comes together so beautifully, especially by the final. I don't want to, I guess, ruin it for people that haven't seen it. But there's a great scene on horseback that's so gorgeous,
surreal, and transcendent.
Yes,
there.
And it reminds it's Night of the Hunter feel to it. It's so gorgeous, and I had this outpouring of emotion all of a sudden. That sneak attack.
It was.
You know, after I'd been impressed by these performances and the dialogue, and then. Boom, emotion. So I think it's a beautiful film. It's not going to win, but it should. Maybe, although I want The Social Network. I think True Grit would be second
sort
for me.
Sort of dry, but very moving then at the end at the same time. Michael, were you moved in that star-lit horseback ride to take you up out of your seat?
True Grit is a film I need to see a second time. I liked it very much. Didn't make my top 10, but what I think what really does cement it for people is when you get to the turn in the story in the last 45 minutes where you really must take that material seriously, the Coens do. And they haven't always been interested in taking the material moments.
Right. They send things up too, yeah.
Could or should. I mean, they just that's their sense of humor. But their sense of humor is just right in sync with the Portis novel, and that's why the film works.
Yeah. Michael Phillips, Kim Morgan, please stand by. We're looking at Oscar picks all coming up on Sunday night. What do you think of this year's crop from Hollywood? Gwyneth Paltrow here. We'll hear from her, I think, on Sunday night. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about Oscar picks on the home stretch to the red carpet to the Academy Awards. You can join the conversation this hour with Michael Phillips, film critic at the Chicago Tribune, and Kim Morgan. She'll be live blogging Sunday night for MSN's The Hit List blog. Her own is The Sunset Gun. Here's a little bit from The Kids Are All Right, up for 4 awards, including Best Picture, Non-Traditional Family, 2 Lesbian Moms. The kids find their biological father, who was a sperm donor. Her daughter, Jamie, explains the situation in an awkward call with her biological father, Paul. That's Mike Ruffalo.
Actually, my brother asked if I'd call you because I'm 18 and he's only 15, which is too young to call. Anyway, he'd like to meet you.
Yeah, if you want to.
Your brother?
Yeah, well, technically he's my half-brother.
Each of my moms had a kid, with your sperm.
Like in both of them?
Yeah.
Like in 2?
Uh-huh, like in gay.
Oh, right on.
Right on, yeah, cool.
I love lesbians.
Boy, Mike Ruffalo and Mia Wasikowska is the daughter there, with your sperm under her breath, and she really makes you feel for the kid there. Get right into those shoes. Annette Bening up for Best Supporting Actress out of that, and 3 more. Ted in Burlington, Vermont, you're on the air, Ted. Thanks for joining us.
I just want to say three quick things. One is Christian Bale was amazing. This year was one of my favorite years of all time. I think The True Grit was the worst movie this year, and that says a lot about how good the movies are, because I still thought True Grit was great. And then finally, I'd like to get all your folks' thoughts on 2 movies. Winter's Bone, which I'd vote for Natalie Portman, but that girl was great. And the other one, which was an amazing movie that I recommend to everyone, is The Illusionist out of France. It's an animated movie. That's it. Thanks.
Winter's Bone and The Illusionist. Now, The Illusionist, I don't know at all. Michael, Kim, help me out here.
The Illusionist is up for best. Is it not up for best?
Best checking? Animated feature, and it's based on Tati.
So this is an unfilmed script by Jacques Tati that was completed in the late 50s and shelved and never, and then revised, and it's quite lovely. I think it's softer and more sentimental than the kind of film that Tati himself would have made, but I think it is pretty beautiful. And Winter's Bone, I think, is, there are 2 pictures that fell below a certain budget line that did make it into the Best Picture nominee list this year. Winter's Bone and The Kids Are All Right, and I happen to think both of them are good. I really like The Kids Are All Right, but it doesn't have much Oscar heat for whatever reason.
I'd like to talk more about Winter's Bone. I really loved it, despite our Facebook commenter, Christine, earlier. It's up for 4 awards, including Best Picture. Main character, 17-year-old Ree Dolly, Jennifer Lawrence plays her in rural Missouri. Her mother's catatonic, father's a meth addict who's jumped bail. With her family's home on the line, she sets out across this really bleak, impoverished landscape to find her father. Deals with a lot of hostile characters along the way.
What is it you want?
I got a real bad need to talk with Thump.
And he ain't got no need to talk to you.
But I need to. I really, really got to, ma'am, please. Some of our blood at least is the same. Ain't that supposed to mean something?
Ain't you got no men could do this?
No, ma'am, I don't.
Kim Morgan, Winter's Bone, not your fave. I just thought it was great in taking us to a scene that we almost never see in the movie.
I don't hate the film or anything like that. It's just not my favorite. It's not.
Do you have something against meth addicts?
Yeah, what's up with meth addicts?
I love meth addicts. Guy's name Thump? I love Christian Bale.
Well, that was crack, wasn't it?
That was crack. Okay, I'm sorry. There's some wonderful moments, and I think that Jennifer Lawrence is terrific in Winter's Bone also. So, The Kids Are All Right is also not one of my favorite films, even though I think the performances are great. I think Winter's Bone is a better cinematic experience than The Kids Are All Right, if I'm going to look at it that way. But
is there a budget hurdle? If you don't spend enough on the movie, you're not really
in contention? I'm really happy that they are in the top in the 10 contenders, because one of the things about the 10 picture nominations that bothered me at first was that I thought, well, they're just doing this to get more viewers for the telecast so that more popular films will be nominated, so that, you know, Big Mama's House 3, well, that wasn't very popular, but whatever.
But
one
for
day,
example, the blinds,
a Big Mama's...
But like the
one
blind
day they'll
side.
Be out of them and they'll have to right the blind yeah. side exactly
blind side last year. I mean that confirmed the cynic's view of the why did they expand
right.
it back to from 5 to 10. It's like, well, so we could get a big hit like the blind side in there, which mm-hmm. you know didn't have much artistic merit of any kind, I thought, you know. So
but this it's nice that Winner's Bone and the Kids Are All Right made it in there, because they may not have
What do you make of the number 10 here for Best Picture? I mean, that just came back last year. It's been many years since they had more than five. Is it a good thing overall? Allow you to sort of give a nod to more pictures? Or I don't know. What do you think of it, Michael?
That's great inflation, I think.
Inflation.
I don't really know what to make of it beyond the fact that it is what Kim suggests, which is, you know, it's an attempt to—I think when a film like The Dark Knight— didn't get a Best Picture nomination. Mm-hmm. There was enough hoo-ha in Hollywood about it because that was a franchise blockbuster that, in many opinions, was pretty good, you know, and very good, in fact. And that's the idea, I think, is to get more of that kind of picture of the, and yet you get the ancillary benefit of, you know, in this case, Winter's Bone, The Kids Are All Right, sneaking in there. I think Winter's Bone is good, but there's something about the sound of the dialogue we just heard from Winter's mm-hmm, Bone mm-hmm. where you have that stylized argot that mm-hmm. is not meant to be straight-up realism-naturalism. It's meant to be slightly poeticized, but I don't buy it in a funny way, even though it's set further back and it's much more florid. I buy the dialogue in True Grit, or maybe I just enjoy the sound mm-hmm. of it more. So that's part of what... prevented for me the Winter's Bone from being great. I think it's good, and she is very good, and all the acting is very good.
I mean, do people, maybe if you don't buy it, is because you really think it's overblown, or you just don't travel in the realm of that argot, as you say?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I haven't. It's not my.
Don't summer in the Ozarks lately.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't. You know, that wing of the family, I don't talk to. You know, but
it didn't strike me as so far off. I mean, that's not so far from my home turf, and it didn't strike me as so far off base. I thought it was pretty cool.
Well,
It's funny that we're all talking about this, because it's, again, going back to things like The Fighter, where people just and Winter's Bone, where people mm-hmm. don't think this is realistic, you know, and then other people say, hey, I lived in Lowell. I've heard people talk like
right,
that. I've seen
right,
people
right,
like that.
Right.
So, you know, whatever is considered realistic. I think I agree with Michael, though, even if it's how it's delivered.
Yes.
And I agree exactly with what you're saying. I think that's what my problem was with the film, too. And it's a perfect analogy with True Grit. What you're saying, it works in that case
mm-hmm.
Because if it does sound stylizing, people do talk like that, but it didn't come across naturalistic to me, and I think it wanted to, and it just didn't.
Right.
Kim, do you see big trends? We've got this amazing range of subject matter here, but are there big trends somehow in what's coming out of the studios when you look at the nominees this year? Kim, I'll ask you first, and Michael too. But Kim,
the trends that are coming out of from the nominees this year.
I mean, are there trends in subject or the kind of films that are being mounted? I mean, where are we in Hollywood filmmaking right now? Can you make any sort of big, I don't know, observations about where Hollywood's maw is turning? You know, and 3D is all over the place. Is that
yeah,
a big
3D
deal?
Yeah, 3D is. Well, Toy Story was in 3D, but I mean, that is a big trend that people are arguing about so much. Critics are arguing about, and I'm torn on it, because of course I think films like Toy Story 3 or Coraline integrated it really beautifully in the picture, but then, you know, they make it's made just to get people to go to the theater. It's kind of like in the 50s where studios were afraid of television. Well, now we're afraid of the internet, so we need to get mm-hmm. people to come into the theater for these big spectacles. And so, as I've heard now, Michael, and maybe you can help me with this. There's a rumor that Baz Luhrmann is directing The Great Gatsby in 3D.
In 3D, which is, you
is
know,
this true?
The specter of those eyeglasses on the side of the building in 3D. I'm already
Baz
having nightmares. Luhrmann.
You did Moulin Rouge in Australia, and now The Great Gatsby in 3D. Oh my God.
Moulin Rouge, which is a film which it's like the one film that you could actually prescribe Ritalin to. And I find that film just aggravating in the extreme. And I just, in any dimension, I'm skeptical about Baz Luhrmann doing The Great Gatsby. But, I would say the one thing I hope that would make a dent in the Hollywood consciousness is when you look at these 10 nominees for Best Picture and you look at how many of them, whether you love them or not, are essentially made for adults. You know, Black Swan, King's Speech, Social Network, you know, and wide appeal. But a lot of these pictures, a surprising amount of these films, have made a really good pile of dough. And they weren't franchises. They weren't for gamers.
No,
they
Superman 10.
Look, I don't have any snobbery about a good you know, like the first Iron Man or the last Batman picture, whatever. I take heart from that, and I would just pray that it leads to greenwriting the occasional modestly budgeted long shot that wasn't made for 15-year-olds. I hope.
There's a good prayer. Mike in Hartford, Connecticut. You're on the air, Mike. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Hi. Your guest had mentioned the backlash against Melissa Leo for campaigning and for her nomination and speaking out about ageism. I must commend her, because especially this time of year when the Oscars are showing the bright side of Hollywood, there's that dark side where a lot of older actors and actresses go through horrible lengths of the plastic surgery to look younger. You only had to watch CNN last night, and Sharon Stone was on, and she's unrecognizable from who she was 20 years ago. It's a shame that pressure is felt, and I give Melissa Leo credit for not just suffering through it in silence or going that route.
Yeah, a shout-out to Melissa Leo. Raise the flag, and why not? I appreciate it, Mike. Let's get one more. James, Abington, Massachusetts. James, you're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What do you like?
The movie I think deserves to win a few Oscars this year is Inception.
Inception. Why?
Well, just because it's so well conceived in the plot that I honestly, when are you ever going to see a movie about dream theft again? And the plot was just amazing. I couldn't stop thinking about it for a week after I saw it, and special effects were mind-blowing, and honestly, it wasn't even too hollow a plot either, because the action was amazing.
James, I'm glad you called. I want to talk about Inception. We've got a little clip from it right here. Let's listen, and then we'll go at it. Science fiction, blockbuster, 8 Academy Awards up there, including Best Picture. Dom Cobb, that's played by Leonardo DiCaprio, is a corporate spy, uses shared dreaming to steal secrets. He recruits an architecture grad student, Ariadne Ellen Page, to help design the elaborate dream worlds. Here she gets her first lesson.
Let me ask you a question. You never really remember the beginning of a dream, do you? You always wind up right in the middle of what's going on.
I guess, yeah.
So how did we end up here?
Well, we just came from the,
Think about it, Ariadne. How did you get here? Where are you right now?
We're dreaming?
You're actually in the middle of the workshop right now, sleeping. This is your first lesson in shared dreaming. Stay calm.
There from Inception. All right, Kim and Michael, help me here. I need guidance. James absolutely loved this film, and I've heard that again and again from a lot of people. I could not stand it. My problem, I fell asleep in the film. Then I was dreaming. I didn't know if I was watching the film or dreaming. I mean, I could not stand it, but a lot of people love it. What? Why is this or is it just me? Or is this a divisive film in terms, you know, whether it's great or lousy?
Tom, did you have a heavy meal before? Did you have a heavy meal before you saw it?
I don't know. I thought I had hallucinogens, and I didn't like them.
That clip sounded like a Max Fisher production of Inception. I didn't like the film either. I think it's...
maybe you've got to be a video game generation. Like, you know, where you've got 16 levels to the game and you're queued up for that fascination.
The game kept falling apart for me, though. And it looked like a beautifully shot Prada ad. I mean, everyone looks gorgeous in it. The Hans Zimmer music drove me nuts. I felt like it was just a relentless exposition, you know, through the entire picture. I didn't feel anything for the characters. I didn't care about Leonardo DiCaprio. I didn't care about Joseph Gordon-Levitt. I ended up caring about Ken Watanabe. I don't know why. I guess because he was dying through the movie. But
he's cool.
I just didn't feel any, and I don't need to care. I don't need to have an emotional connection to the characters. But if the film is properly made, and that's the point. But that was not the point. You really were supposed to feel for Leo and his deceased wife and all that.
Yeah.
And I just didn't think the dreams were as impressively mounted and as they were. They just weren't that interesting. And as I was watching it, I kept thinking, though it could have been a huge mess, I wish that Terry Gilliam had directed this movie, you know?
Why?
And not. Because he would have had some soul in it. The actors would have been likable. There would have been some whimsy. Someone would have had a dream where they'd actually have some joy. The film was absolutely joyless.
Maybe the soul piece is what I was missing. Michael, is there a culture divide here somehow?
Certainly was, because, I mean, nobody at the studio was expecting this thing to even get by. And then when it did very well the first time, you go, well, okay, well, all the gamers are digging it. But it had a broader appeal than people expected. I enjoyed it. It is just one big monstrous contraption. But I do agree with Kim that the dream states in it are all very kind of stately and a little heavy on their feet. And I don't equate the state of dreaming with that sort of leisurely set piece. You know, I don't usually get 10 sequential minutes in a dream. You don't get those kind of quick synaptic change-ups. And Nolan apparently sees it a different way. But, you know, as I come back to that issue of, like, you know, do we believe what we see on screen, that really was the question of the year in all kinds of films, and certainly in Inception.
We've got 15 seconds. You guys are pros. Are you on the edge of your seats on Oscar night or something else?
Michael, you can...
I'm perpetually on the edge of every seat I'm on, Tom.
Oh, what a forward-leaning man. You're going to be blogging, live blogging, Kim. You've got to be.
I have to be, right? Yeah, I have to be on my feet.
That's the pro. James, who loves Inception, this one's for you. We're going to go out with the soundtrack from Hans Zimmer. Kim Morgan with Sunset Gun. Thank you so much for being with us, Kim.
Thank you for having me.
Michael Phillips at the Chicago Tribune. Thank you, Michael.
Tom, Kim, thanks a lot.
Go Oscars. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.